I'll call our third and last case for the today and for the November calendar. 06AP2761, Wisconsin Realtors Association versus the town of West Point. Arguing on behalf of the Realtors Association and Builders Association is Lori M. Kupinski. Counsel?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. As you are aware, I represent the plaintiff's appellants in this matter. At issue in this case is a ordinance enacted by the town of West Point, which prohibited for an 18-month period the acceptance, review, and approval of all land divisions or subdivisions located within the town. It was a town-wide ban on land division. They subsequently extended that moratorium an additional 6 months. And the stated intent, as set forth in the ordinance, was to halt development until the town adopted its smart growth plan under Chapter 66. The question before you is whether the town of West Point had the legal authority to enact this moratorium. The standard is clear and undisputed between the parties. The town, under existing case law, must have authority as derived by statute. Towns are creatures of the legislature. They must have the statutory authority to do what they did. And the authority they must have may be either express or implied. An implied authority is one in which the power is necessary to implement a express power granted in the statutes. So perhaps the power might not be express, but it may be implied based on the express powers granted. This case centers on the limits of a municipality's authority under Chapter 236-45. It is not about whether all towns in Wisconsin have moratorium authority. In fact, as we set forth in our brief, towns in counties which do not have comprehensive countywide zoning do have the authority to enact a zoning ordinance under Chapter 60.61 sub 2, as well as the fact that towns with village powers have the authority to enact a comprehensive zoning ordinance under 60.62 with certain conditions such as county approval and approval by a town meeting. So I want to emphasize first and foremost that this decision will not apply to every single town in the state of Wisconsin, but it will apply to those towns that are located within counties that have comprehensive county-wide zoning, and for those towns that want to enact zoning ordinances which are not approved by the county and which are not approved by a town meeting or by referendum vote.
How do we know the county is going to approve it until it's passed?
Until the the town would be required, Your Honor, to provide to the county.
Right, after it passes the town.
Correct.
But during that interim, then you're saying they can't have a moratorium?
Correct. The ordinance enacted by the town would not be effective until county approval.
So everything can continue on and no moratorium.
Correct. And the town concedes it didn't do that in this case. I think it's important in light of the Court of Appeals statement to the court to recognize that there are avenues for a town to enact a moratorium, and those avenues, admittedly so by the town, were not followed in this case.
When you say that, you mean that they indicate they were not going under their zoning ordinance under 60 or 62, but rather under their subdivision ordinance 236.46, something like that.
236.45.
45.
Correct.
Thank you.
And they concede that they didn't pursue their ordinance under Chapter 60. The important, the reason why we bring this up is not only to to make clear the import of the court's decision, but also for the court to understand that zoning ordinances are a relevant source of moratorium authority. In fact, all of the parties, including the amicus, have briefed the applicability of Chapter 62, more specifically, Chapter 62.237DA, which is the statute that authorizes the enactment of an interim zoning ordinance to preserve existing uses for...
Ms. Levinsky, if I can interrupt for a minute. Are we only looking at the statute at 236.45, or do we also have to look at the idea of police power and whether or not the police power would justify a moratorium such as this?
I think we have to look at both. The town has relied on both Chapter 236.45 as well as its police power, but I would submit the court to the fact that other than just simply asserting and saying it's police power doesn't make it so. The law is very clear that with respect to authority of a town to do, for example, what the town of West Point did in this case, must be derived by express powers granted in the statute. And simply by saying we as a town have general police power doesn't aid the court in analyzing what is that power. How is it that a townwide moratorium is consistent with that power or is implied by that express power? And as we articulated in our brief, we believe that the police powers afforded to a town are very narrow. Even a town with village powers, like the town of West Point, the police powers, if you look at the 60.22, a town may exercise police powers, 60.22 says a town with village powers may exercise village powers except when they conflict with the statutes relating to towns. The statutes relating to towns say they don't give the kind of broad-based police powers that I think the town of West Point is trying to argue in this case. They basically say, look, you've got some limits here. You've got police powers for building code ordinances. You've got police powers for adoption when you don't have countywide comprehensive zoning for historic preservation. But towns have no authority to adopt an ordinance under a police powers type theory absent the instances that we outlined in our brief. So I guess to answer your question, yeah, it's something they've relied on, but we haven't seen the statute that grants them the express power to enact the moratorium.
I've got another question that relates to the statute itself, to 236.45.2a. I know that you've made an argument in your brief to the effect that the words in areas are very significant words. And I think I generally understand both your position and the response. Is there any legislative history at all that would be helpful in that regard?
There is, Your Honor. What we know is this, that originally, this statute, when it was originally enacted, contained the phrase, to back up a little bit, that land division may occur or a town may prohibit the division of land in specific areas where such prohibition will carry out the purposes under sub 1. And so originally, when this statute was enacted, the language said in specific areas. We also know, and that was prior to 1955, in 1955, the legislature recodified this among other statutes. And what it did, and this is clear from Senate Bill number 20, is it intended no substantive change to the statute, but removed the word specific. That is the legislative history that's before you. I would argue from that history that the fact that the original statute contained the word specific makes very clear the legislative intent that if you're going to prohibit land division under 236.45, that it must be with regard to specific areas or certain areas or a rational area of the town. And that while the town argues removal of the word specific somehow signified a legislative intent to allow townwide moratorium, the word specific, given the legislative history and not intending any substantive change, would best be characterized as simply eliminating a superfluous word. Because when you look at the statute, and it's this simple, when you look at 23645 sub 2a, the town of West Point contends that the town has the authority to prohibit the division of land where the prohibition will carry out the purposes of the act or of the section. They read out the phrase in areas. And the question is, can you do that? Can we read out of the statute two words of that statute which were clearly originally intended to limit the power of municipalities enacting ordinances under the statute?
Does in areas, does it mean in some areas? Does it mean in all areas? And why would one be preferable over the other?
The phrase in areas must be tied to, with regard to land division, in areas of a town, must be tied to the purposes that are being articulated for the enactment of the ordinance.
Right, and we have that. That's the declaration of legislative intent in sub 1. So we got a lot of good purposes to lessen congestion in the streets and highways, to give a great environment for human habitation, all those things. So I'm not so concerned about the legislative intent as I want to focus on the area, the language of in areas. When I was reading the briefs, I thought, okay, a township, let's say I'm in charge of picking up garbage in the township. Garbage pickup is on in area A is on Mondays, B, Tuesdays, C, D. Okay, so you have four areas in the township for garbage pickup. And why isn't that in areas? It'd cover the whole town, but there are certain areas in the town. I don't know why in areas, you seem to be arguing in areas precludes being in encompassing the whole township.
The reason why we believe it precludes encompassing of the whole township is that to make that conclusion that it can encompass the whole township, there's absolutely no reason for the words in the statute then.
It gives it flexibility. It doesn't have to be the whole township. It can be part of the township. It can be the whole township. Does your argument mean that if the ordinance covered 99.9% of the town, but not the whole town, you wouldn't be making that argument because that's only an area of town?
No, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that in order to effectuate a lawful prohibition on land division in areas of the town, one must justify that area as compared to the purpose for the ordinance. So if, for example, there's an area where traffic is horrendous in the town, and it's a corner, two corners, five corners, this particular area is horrible for traffic. In that instance, the town would have the authority to say, okay, we've got a traffic problem. It's one of the purposes under sub 1. We need to deal with that traffic problem, and based on that problem, then we are going to prohibit land division in that specific area. But we're not going further in the statute. We're not going to preclude you, like the town did in this case, from filing your application for land division. We're not going to preclude you from having the town review your application for land division. We're only going to say, as a general matter, we're not going to allow land division in that little, in that traffic area. And the town went even further in this case because they violated the next sentence of the statute, which requires that all of the divisions that are authorized under the chapter, or under the statute rather, make applicable the entire chapter. Well, the chapter 236 is, there are mandatory provisions. There's no dispute about that in this case. When somebody files an application for a plat, a town, absent what the town of West Point did in this case, a town can't just not take it. They don't have the authority to say, no, you can't give us your plat.
Do they have the authority not to review it?
No, they don't have the authority not to review it. In fact, they have to review it. They can disapprove of it.
Can they stay the review of it? Isn't that what we're here about?
Well, that's not what the town did in this case, but your question, can they stay it? Can
What's the name of this ordinance here? Isn't the name of the ordinance, when I say name, I mean, you know, what's the caption of the ordinance? I think it's on appendix page 10, right?
I believe it's ordinance number 9-20-05A, and it should be on page
10. An ordinance to impose a temporary stay on the acceptance, review, and approval of land divisions and subdivisions. So that's what this is about, a temporary stay.
Correct.
On the acceptance, review, and approval.
But this ordinance, just so we're clear, does not allow the town to take the plat application, does not allow the town to review the plat application. It says the town will not accept, review, or approve land divisions in the town for a period of, at the time, 18 months.
Ms. Lubinsky, if I can back up for just a moment. Looking at the language of the statute 236.45, what significance, if any, is the use of the plural word areas with respect to the statute?
It allows multiple ordinances. It would allow an ordinance to cover different areas. For example, if you've got a traffic problem in area A as well as area B, C, and D.
And maybe I'm not being a little obtuse in my question. When I see the term areas, plural, and we're talking about the authority of the town, municipality, or county, if it includes the entire area, then you don't have areas, you have areas. So if you have a moratorium for the entire location, it's area singular. And that's why I asked the question, what's the significance of the use of the word plural? Does it signify something other than the whole?
It may signify something other than the whole, but if we were to read in your term in area, it would read, and the town may prohibit the division of land in area where such prohibition will carry out the purposes of the section. There would be no need for that word, that phrase, in area. And stated another way, if town-wide moratorium or bans on land division were allowed under the statute, it would simply say towns may prohibit the division of land where the prohibition will carry out the purposes of the section. There would be no need for the word in area or in areas. So I understand your point. I think it was intended, and it was, just so you know, it was that the plural was originally there. Specific areas was how the statute was originally prior to the 1955 codification. That's how it was originally worded. And I believe it was intended to encompass those situations where a town, city, village, county may want to ban land division in multiple areas located within the jurisdiction.
Counselor, if I would agree with you that they did it wrong, they couldn't do it under 236.45, they don't have the power, is there any other way the town could have enacted a moratorium while it did its smart growth plan?
Yes.
How?
Under Chapter 60.62, since this town has village powers and is located in a county with comprehensive countywide zoning, the town could have enacted this ordinance if it A, obtained county approval, and B, obtained approval by the town by either a town meeting or referendum vote.
But we agreed when you discussed that earlier that while the town was trying to figure out what it wanted to do, there was no moratorium and that there would be a run on getting appropriate permits and filing appropriate documents by those who wanted to build. Right?
I don't think we agreed to that, no.
Well, how long will it take the town to enact the ordinance?
To enact the ordinance?
Yeah, and they have to figure out what... Meeting.
That's what they did in this case.
Well, they have to figure out what they want if they're going to enact a zoning ordinance. So it's going to take more than a town meeting. There may be a zoning board in the town. There may have to be hearings. It then goes to the whole town. You got several months, right?
True.
Okay. Then it has to go to the county for approval. How long is that going to take?
Could be a matter of a month.
And it could be a matter of a year or more. And more likely, it's going to be more than a month because you got to get to the county committee, the county board, have hearings, have votes. Okay. Then you're going to have to get to the town again, right?
Correct.
Including potentially a referendum?
Either a referendum or approved by a town meeting.
Right.
So you can hold town meetings if you call for them. But yes.
That's going to take time. So we are now at least 2 years.
And I would submit that there are many towns that have enacted their smart growth legislation well within that period of time.
That's right. So within that two-year period, there is no moratorium. Isn't that right?
If that's how long it takes, correct.
Right. Okay. And that's the point. So within that time period, whether it be 1 month or 2 years, everybody can go ahead and build under what the existing law is. And that's a race to get your stuff in before a new plan is devised by the town. Isn't that right?
That is absolutely correct.
And the whole point about the smart growth is to stop that, give people enough time to work something out before you've got it all fixed and set in stone.
That's not the point of smart growth.
The
point of smart growth is to adopt a comprehensive plan that's going to govern the growth of the town.
Right, but there's no point in having a comprehensive plan if everybody's already taken up the property and built on it or has plans in for building and they've been approved.
And that's historically been true. In fact, the smart growth, if the legislature really intended that this significant piece of legislation that allows municipalities like this town, or requires, rather, municipalities like this town to make this comprehensive planning change, which, of course, is a 10-year process.
Right.
If they would have wanted to also allow that town, that city, that village, to be given a reprieve that they never had in the first place, unless, of course, they went under 62.37, they would have done so. If it was the legislature's intent to give a municipality working through its smart growth plan with the very idea you just articulated, Chief Justice, about allowing them to just put on hold for a while we do this comprehensive plan, they certainly would have done so, and they didn't do so.
They did it in 236.45 by the very language of the statute. It is arguable. And the cases that talk about zoning and land subdivision being very comparable. Let's see what case that was. Woodstorm. Town of... that's the one I'm looking for. Right. So you can argue it's there. They don't have to repeat it 17 times. And they gave a 10-year period for smart growth. And is there any movement now to get rid of the smart growth legislation?
Not that I'm aware of. I may not be privy to something, however, so I don't know that I can answer your question with 100% certainty. But what I will say about the smart growth plan is that you're right. I mean, Chapter 236 was clearly in place. But so was Chapter 62.37. Chapter 62.37 is the statute that clearly allows comprehensive town-wide, if you do it the right way, or city-wide authority to do what the town did in this case. That statute was there before 236. So if we're going to argue that the legislature didn't need to do it under smart growth because they already had it, then I would submit to you, if that's the reasoning, then the reasoning should equally be that the authority's not there under Chapter 236 because it was already there under Chapter 62. And there'd be no reason to go forward. Let me state it one different way.
Let me interrupt you, if I might, because I know your red light just came on. So if indeed they could have done it another way, why is it so important that they did it allegedly the wrong way?
It's so important, A, because the statutes are set up procedurally to get, in this case, county consent. And when you've got the consent of the county to work cooperatively with the town, you've got a mechanism by which the towns and the counties and the cities are working cooperatively to effectuate the goals of the county and the goals of the town. It, stated another way, it lessens the risk that a town may simply just not want development. And that's not a legitimate goal in light of the procedures that are required to be followed by way of county approval. I do see my time is up. I will sit down unless there's any other questions. Thank you.
There are no questions, and thank you, Council. Mr. Nording, representing the town of West Point.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Nording. I represent the town of West Point, which is the respondent in this case. Also with me is my colleague Brian Kleinmeier and several officials from the town of West Point. The town chair, Dean Schwartz, is here, town clerk Edith Eberly, and a number of other persons who worked on the town's smart growth plan and on the town's new land division ordinance. I brought those along just to show you what they are. This is the new land division ordinance, which went into effect September 13th of this year. This is the smart growth plan. A lot of work and a lot of thoughtful planning went into this document. This was completed at about the end of June, and then the ordinance followed. Now, I have in mind to address two main points in my argument today. The first one is to make very clear precisely what question is pending before the court. Because sometimes when I read the arguments posed by the appellants and by the and in the amicus brief on their side, I get the impression that these arguments are directed at a question somewhat different from the one that's actually posed here. And the second thing that I want to address is how we think the court should go about the question of how do you construe Section 236.45 sub 2A of the Wisconsin statutes. Now, before I get to those two points, I just want to take one moment for a brief background to put this matter in context, because I think that two questions are sort of looming in the background here. Where is the town of West Point, and why in the world would a town like that think that they might have a need for a moratorium on land divisions? The town of West Point is located in the furthest southwesternmost corner of Columbia County. It is between Lodi and Sauk City, basically, just across the Dane County border. And it has Wisconsin River flowing all across the northern part of the town. In fact, the Merrimack Ferry is located in the town. And for many years, the town of West Point was essentially almost entirely a rural farming community. But that has been changing, and in recent years, it has been changing quite rapidly. The Department of Administration has projected a 12.8% increase in population for the town of West Point for the period 2000 to 2010. That's a rate of increase substantially greater than most Wisconsin towns. And by comparison, the Department of Administration projected a 6.5% growth rate for the town of Roxbury in Dane County, which is just south of the town of West Point. As it happens, the actual growth rate that's been occurring in the town of West Point has been even faster than what the Department of Administration projected. And in part, this may be due to the fact that we have the recently expanded and very much improved Highway 12 corridor that goes from the Madison area right up to Sauk City, which is right on the doorstep of the town of West Point, so that now the town of West Point is an easy 25 minutes or so from Greater Madison. So there has been a changing character, a rather rapidly changing character, for the town of West Point, and that is the reason why in 2005 the town decided it needed a new comprehensive plan and a new land division ordinance. They had a land division ordinance, but it was one that was designed for the rural farming community that it used to be. And so they went about the planning process and the process to develop a new land division ordinance. But in the meantime, they were concerned that there may be even more land divisions that would change the character of the town before they could get their planning done. That is why the moratorium was enacted. Now, I want to mention one other side point here, which is this is not a showdown between pro-development forces or pro-private property forces on the one hand and anti-development or anti-private property forces on the other hand. At least the town does not see it that way. The town did not adopt its comprehensive plan or its land division ordinance in order to stifle or stop growth and development. Growth and development in the town of West Point are inevitable given its location, given its natural beauty. Those things are going to occur. The purpose of the comprehensive plan and the new ordinance was to ensure that the development that will occur will be well-planned and of good quality. And I submit to you that well-planned and good-quality development protects the value of private property, including the property of developers, such as realtors and builders. It is ill-conceived growth that diminishes the value of private property and can put a strain on the public purse. So this case is not a showdown between pro-development or pro-private property forces and anti-forces.
Counsel, as I understand this case, this, what we're asked to do is interpret some statutes here.
And that's correct.
In interpreting these statutes, one of the statutes that has been presented by opposing counsel's brief deals with 62.23(7)(DA). The common council of any city which has not adopted a zoning ordinance may, without referring the matter to the plan commission, enact an interim ordinance to preserve existing uses while the comprehensive zoning plan is being prepared. Now, you've talked about the need to have this comprehensive plan. The legislature has made at least a designation here with respect to cities. What is the import of the fact that the legislature has not similarly designated villages and towns to have the same authority that they have expressly granted to cities?
Well, I'll put it this way. The statute to which you refer is a zoning statute. And the potential type of moratorium that can be implemented under the zoning statute is actually a significantly more severe moratorium than the town imposed here. It would be a freeze on uses so that zoning could not change. There was no moratorium on rezonings in the town of West Point for the under the ordinance that was adopted there.
Maybe I haven't made my question clear. I understand your point, but the question I'm asking is that given the fact that the legislature has deemed to speak out in areas dealing with comprehensive plans and moratoriums, if they have spoken within this chapter, within section 62.23, and specifically carved out an exception for cities and have not carved out an exception for towns and villages. Has the legislature already answered this question? That's the import of my...
No, it hasn't. The power to enact an interim zoning freeze under the statute that you refer to could be employed by a village or a town, because a town could, if it has been granted village board powers, can exercise those city powers as well, I believe.
But we don't have that here, correct?
I don't believe we do, no. But the most fundamental point I would make in regard to your question, Justice Butler, is this. The question, and really much of the arguments that comes from the appellant, sort of boils down to this when they talk about zoning. And that is, if there's some express authority under the zoning law, doesn't that imply a limitation on what can be done with regard to land division regulation? And I think this court has answered that very question on numerous occasions, including in the Lake City Corp case, 207 West 2nd 55 at page 172, where the court quoted approvingly of the language directly from the very statute that you referred to that says the zoning authority that's granted to municipalities, quote, may not be deemed a limitation on any power granted elsewhere, close quote. And that principle has been followed by this court not only in the Lake City Corp case, but in the Town of Sun Prairie versus Storms case and in the Wood v. City of Madison case. So the fact that there's a certain situation that exists in the zoning statutes, even if towns could not employ it, does not suggest any limitation on what may be done under the Land Division Regulation Ordinance 236.45.
And with respect to Section 236.45, I'll ask you the same question I asked Ms. Lubinsky. The fact that the language of the statute refers to a plural of the term areas in the statute, which seems to connote multiple areas as opposed to the one area, does that suggest that therefore we can't be looking at terms of a moratorium with respect to the entire village, entire town? You understand the question that I've got?
I believe I do understand the question, and I believe the answer to the question is no. I do not think that the use of the plural has any significance in terms of implying that the moratorium or the prohibition may not be municipal-wide. And the reason I say that is there's no limiting qualifier in the statute to the term areas, except one very important limitation, and that is that the prohibition in areas, whatever areas they may be, must be a prohibition that carries out the purposes of the statute. That is a very important and significant qualifier. But other than that qualifier, there is no limitation on the areas to which a prohibition may apply. And I would submit to you that we can consider two alternative ways of writing this statute. One that would say the prohibition may apply in any area, singular, or in any areas, plural. And my view would be that the latter phrase, areas, would be more encompassing and broader than if the singular had been used.
Counselor, does the ordinance that was enacted conflict with the plat approval requirements of 236.12?
No.
Why not?
Well, just one moment. I got some notes on that here. I'll just state it from memory. The argument there is, for example, there is a provision in Chapter 236 that requires that submissions for approval of land divisions be forwarded to other reviewing authorities. And the language in the statute is stated in such a way that it indicates that what must comport with the provisions in Chapter 236 are divisions. In other words, no land division is valid unless it comports with mandatory requirements of the statute. But in a case where there is a prohibition on certain kinds of land divisions, and the appellants concede, as they must, that the statute authorizes some kinds of prohibitions, then there will be no land division in those instances, and no reason, therefore, to think that a prohibited land division should be forwarded to someone for approval review.
What about case law that says when a plat is submitted, there are limited choices about what the town can do with it?
Right. There are certain elements that may be referred to as a basis for approval or disapproval, and one of them is a local ordinance. And that is what would be the basis for a disapproval here. But with regard to the local ordinance in...
This ordinance goes far beyond that, because what it says is you don't accept the plat for division. You don't rule on it. You don't do anything with it. So it's not really a disapproval of the plat.
Well, you know, that representation of this ordinance is which the appellants have made, ignores, for one thing, a significant part of the ordinance. There are six categories of exceptions identified in the ordinance, including an exception relating to economic hardship for a landowner, and another exception that could be employed if it would be necessary in order to remedy some situation that could harm public health or public welfare. And as it happens, there were, in fact, during nearly 2 years that this ordinance was in place, there were, in fact, two applications for exceptions that were submitted by landowners, and as it turns out, both of them were approved. So even as to the prohibition on land divisions in this ordinance, it is not absolute, and turned out in practice not to be absolute. So, for example,
even though it's entitled a stay on the acceptance, review, and approval of land divisions and subdivision applications, that's not what it is. So you can.
It is that, except unless one falls under an exception.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess what I was concerned with, you know, let's not deal with the exception at the moment, though I think your position is well taken on that. What about if it doesn't fall under the exception, then how does the ordinance itself comply with the statutory requirements as we have interpreted it for a town that has a plat submitted?
Well, as I said before, the criteria for reviewing, when you review an application for a land division...
But you say you're not going to accept them. See, my problem is not that you'd use the ordinance to deny it. My problem is that you're not going to accept them or review them. So I'm in advance of where you're
it would appear that the argument of the appellants, for example, is that if our ordinance had said we're going to accept and review all applications for land division, and unless you fall under one of these exceptions, we will deny you, then there wouldn't have been a problem. And to me, this is putting form over substance, because what would be the point of reviewing an application for a land division that does not fall within one of the exceptions if one knows from the outset that it is going to be rejected due to the moratorium?
Yeah, but if you just forget the exceptions, let's just say you don't have the exceptions there. I understand your argument with regard to that. I have to kind of put it into the way I'm looking at this. But my major concern is that I think the town has an obligation to accept and to review applications. And the ordinance gets rid of that obligation. So that's what I'm having trouble with. Not that you couldn't have an ordinance that would say, sorry, this one isn't going anywhere.
I understand your concern. I'm only saying that, in my opinion, that particular concern raises form over substance, because there would not be much point in accepting and reviewing an application if, under the terms of the ordinance, it were going to be rejected.
Okay.
I
understand. Thank you.
Counsel, if you prevail in this case, what is to prevent another town from enacting an ordinance when a moratorium, when the real motivation is they are against development, period?
Well, that would be a fact-intensive review of a specific case to determine whether or not the moratorium that was imposed, in fact, is one that carries out the purposes of Section 236.45. If a moratorium is not one to carry out the purposes of Section 236.45, then it is not authorized by the statute. Our point is our moratorium does advance the purposes.
If you represented that town, you would probably say, now don't enact this ordinance until you put into it some of the goals that appear in the first part of that section. Or any council would say that. And then it's a legislative determination that has been made by the town based on the authority of the statute. And normally courts are going to give some deference to legislative-type determinations. So, I mean,
I'll grant you all that, and I'll say only in response that if, in fact, there is a sham moratorium for the purposes that you state and someone challenges it on that basis, they could seek to make a case that that's exactly what it was. But certainly that's not the situation that we face here. And I would say further that the appellant's arguments along these lines strike me as boiling down to saying the power to impose a temporary moratorium is one that could be abused. Therefore, court, you should find that it doesn't exist at all. And, you know, if that were an argument to defeat municipal power, it could be used to defeat most of them.
Okay, let me ask this, counsel, and it may be related to your last answer here. But one of the things that I'm trying to do is look at the two statutes together, comparing 62 with 236. And one of the limitations that exists right within the statute under 6223-7DA is a two-year time limit for this moratorium. When you go to 236.34, if I accept your argument, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I see in that statute a time limit, which means that if an ordinance in theory, if you're correct, under this chapter, could be permanent. You could have a permanent moratorium. Now, am I misreading that? Am I incorrect?
No, I think there is no express or specific limitation on the duration of a moratorium enacted under the authority of 236.45. I agree with you there. But I do not believe that one could have a very long-term or a forever moratorium throughout an entire municipality based on that authority, the reason being that the limiter is the requirement that the prohibition is one that carries out the purposes of Section 236.45. Now, in our case, in order to carry out the purposes of 236.45, in order to effectively plan and regulate under a new ordinance, we needed time enough to prepare a new comprehensive plan and a new ordinance, which turned out to be just under 2 years. But we could not use that purpose or that reason as a basis for enacting a moratorium that would last 10 years, 20 years, or forever, from the road builder's brief.
Well, let me ask, and this is a follow-up to Justice Prosser's question, because this is what concerns me. What about a community that has, as part of its plan, we like this community, we like it as it is, we do not want to bring in outside development, we don't want to increase our population. We're sitting here on a lake, we love the lake, we want to keep it pristine, and so our smart plan is to hold things in place. Now, that would be to effectuate the purposes, as I see it, of 236.34 sub 1. And it would be a smart plan if that were the plan. And I'm not sure I could disagree with that analysis. if that's what the city planners wanted to do or the village planners wanted to do. But the concern is, if you're correct, there is no limitation on the moratorium in 236, and you have an express limitation for cities in 62. And my concern is, do we read in anything into the effect that the legislature, at least with respect to cities, has put a time limit? And if you're correct, has not put in a time limit with respect to villages?
Well, all I can tell you is the way that I advise our municipal clients is you should achieve your purpose as soon as you possibly can. And if it's done within less than 2 years, it may be deemed sort of presumptively timely accomplished because of the two-year period that's provided for planning in the zoning statute. But is the 236-45 statute more flexible or undefined relative to time periods? I must grant you that it is. But I also would reiterate that in our view, the limitation that it must be in order to carry out the purposes of the statute is a very significant limitation. And if indeed some community were to impose a so-called permanent prohibition on land divisions under the theory that our plan is we should not be changing at all, that would present a very interesting question if brought before this court as to whether that, in fact, is carrying out the purposes of Section 236.45. I mean, one of the purposes enumerated there is to facilitate the division of land. So I think these purposes have to be viewed in the whole, and I think that's how the court would do it.
This ordinance was passed in September 2005?
That's correct.
And you say that 2 years would be sort of a reasonable time to completely implement the goals of the moratorium?
Well, the plan itself, which I showed here, was completed in, I think, late June, which would have been...
2007, June 2007.
In 2007, right. So that was 21 or 22 months. And some are completed sooner than that, some possibly take longer than that. But I think that within 2 years or less would be deemed a pretty much a norm in this area.
Would people, if there was really an intent to prevent or really discourage development, would people be able to sue before the plan is up, or would they have to wait for the plan?
Well, my view would be anyone who has property that they would like to divide and thinks that the ordinance improperly precludes them from doing it should make an application, and if they're turned down, challenge the fact that they were turned down and find out the result. And I think such a challenge would not be moot just because the moratorium was over. If they were right, they would have been entitled to have their application reviewed under the old ordinance and acted upon accordingly. And so someone who sought to do that could make that kind of a challenge, and if they turned out to prevail, they would be entitled to approval under the old ordinance. No one did that here. And I might add that in regards to whether there was a prohibition or a stop of development in this instance, there was no prohibition on the issuance of building permits either in this instance. And in fact, during the just short of 2 years that the ordinance was in effect, 157 building permits were issued in the town of West Point, of which 35 were for the construction of brand new homes. And so there was quite a bit of development ongoing by builders in the town of West Point while this ordinance was in place. What wasn't happening was the creation of new parcels that would change the character of the town down the road, except for the two exceptions that I mentioned. New parcels were not created until the plan was in place and the new ordinance was in place.
Council, you started your presentation here this afternoon saying you were going to make two points, and your first point was make sure we have the right question.
Right.
You want to tell me what the right question is?
Yes, but I appreciate being peppered with questions because what's on your mind is a lot more important than what's on my mind, I'll tell you that. But we think the question that is presented here is, do Wisconsin municipalities have the authority to adopt a temporary moratorium on land divisions while they prepare a comprehensive plan and a new land division ordinance? That's the question that's presented in this case. And the points that I wanted to make about this, I'll make very briefly. Number one, this question applies to every Wisconsin municipality the same. The authority that the town relies on for its temporary moratorium on land divisions would put cities and villages in the same boat. Yes, they can impose a moratorium on a freeze on uses through the zoning statutes, but what if they don't want to be that severe? What if all they want to have a moratorium on is new land divisions while they work on their new plan?
Is it your position, and you referenced this earlier about the severity of the zoning ordinance, is it your position that if you went the route of the zoning ordinance that you would have to be more severe?
Well, if you freeze uses for 2 years, I think that's a more significant restraint than just delaying the creation of new lots. So that's why I use the word more severe. But one, the question here applies to towns, cities, and villages alike, number one. Number two, the question here pertains to a moratorium on land divisions, not a freeze on uses, not a freeze on issuance of building permits, not a moratorium on development. And number three, the question here is presented in terms of that the moratorium must be for a specific purpose and for, we would say, a limited duration. That is, it must carry out the purposes of Section 236.45, and it should not be in effect any longer than is necessary to carry out those purposes.
But that's not what the statute says, and that's the problem that concerns me. The statute doesn't limit it to a temporary time period, if your argument is correct. That may be the purpose of the ordinance and a valid concern of the municipality, but the authority that you're seeking to utilize that ordinance under doesn't have a limitation there. That statute doesn't make it temporary, and it doesn't link it to comprehensive plans. And that's the concern that I have.
I understand that. All I can say is there is, in our view, a very significant limiting factor in the statute itself, and that is that the prohibition must carry out the purposes of the statute. And I submit that a prohibition that would extend for 10, 20 years, whatever, it could not be grounded on the basis that you're doing it to carry out the purposes of the statute. I see my time is up. I will ask only that you affirm. Thank you.
Council,
yes.
When you posed that question, you didn't cite any authority for doing these things. It seemed to me it almost invited us to just go on a hunt to find authority for you. I mean, should you make a specific reference to 236.45, or do we search the world for the authority?
Well, I referred to the statutory language that says that the prohibition must carry out the purposes of the statute. That's the limiting feature that I am talking about.
I think Justice Prosser is asking you, you framed a question,
yes,
and gave it to us. And you framed it, do Wisconsin municipalities have the authority, temporary moratorium, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You didn't cite a statute. Should you say, do Wisconsin municipalities have the authority under 236.45.2A, 96, whatever it is? I mean, something. What would you put in there?
But under Section 236.45 sub 2A.
All right.
And indeed, is that the question that was formed by the Court of Appeals in their certification, at least as I read it.
I believe so.
Okay. That was your question, Justice Press? Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Thank you. When the question is posed whether municipalities have the authority to enact a temporary moratorium, the answer is clear. The answer is yes. It's under Chapter 62.
Counsel?
Yes.
If your opposing counsel is correct, he says, well, why would you want to go under 62 if you're going to be freezing all uses for 2 years, and calls it more severe?
You can freeze easily. You can freeze uses by prohibiting, in this case, for example, land divisions. Absolutely, entirely appropriate. And I don't know why one would not want to go through that. It's certainly true it's more broader.
I mean, what comes to my mind is something I just read today, a heading of some crazy article, I think, and it is, be careful what you wish for. And that's what comes to my mind. Your opposing counsel is portraying this as a moratorium that under the statute allows for a prohibition of land division, but allows for the continuation of building permits, conditional use permits, and indeed building was going on, as opposed to 62, which is a total freeze of uses.
But my answer is that you can freeze uses by enacting an ordinance that simply prohibits land division. Stated another way, you can do what the town did through Chapter 62 as long as you do it the right way. And so to say, well, 62 is more broad and you can do more there, that's certainly true. But the reverse isn't true, that you can't do what the town did under Chapter 62. You can. You just got to go through the right steps. Those steps were clearly not
followed. I wrote the Woods case, and Woods, the right one is connected to the other. I guess that's what precedent is. The Woods case cited from the Storms case, which cited is it from the Lake City case, and all of them stood for a certain proposition with regard to that, and that is that 62 shouldn't be, in the authority granted therein, shouldn't be used as a limitation for the exercise of that authority elsewhere. That's paraphrasing it. But you seem to be arguing that indeed it should be. And it seems to me that's contrary to, I'm in Lake City, it's said, Lake City determined that 62.23.7a, the zoning powers may not be deemed a limitation on any power granted elsewhere. And that was cited again in Storm and in Wood. And it sounds to me like that's what you're arguing.
That is not what we're arguing. We are not arguing simply because of 62.37 that therefore the power is not within Chapter 236.45. That's not the simple, you can't simplify and distill our argument to that. Because we recognize that zoning and platting are, as we put in our reply brief, they're overlapping. They're three legs of a stool. They certainly overlap.
And can do it under 236.45?
No, they cannot do it under 236.45. But we would certainly concede that there are zoning and platting at times overlaps.
And why can't they do it under 236.45?
Look at the legislative declaration of legislative intent under 236.45. Council for West Point says, as long as this townwide forever ordinance that now has a 2-year limit that is not in Chapter 236.45, as long as it's consistent with the intent, where in subsection 1 does it say that the intent is to carry out the purposes of implementing the plan? Planning is not a purpose enumerated under 236.45 sub 1.
How about the orderly development of land? Isn't that under sub 1?
It certainly, the orderly development of land may authorize a land division in areas of the town where, given the plan that's in place that then guides the implementation of the plan, that is the zoning and the platting, If that all flows, absolutely. But you got to have the plan first. And they're using 236.45 as a basis for prohibiting land division for purposes of planning in general. Comprehensive townwide planning. Comprehensive townwide planning and city planning, we can look to Chapter 62. That tells us what you can do when you want to deal with freezes during comprehensive planning. That's not what 236.45. So they're certainly interrelated. But when you look at, as opposing counsel has asked the court to do, look at what the purpose is, and that's going to guide how far you can go. In other words, where to draw the line. Are we going to have an ordinance that's 20 years long, that prohibits land in this entire town? He says we've got to look at the legislative intent. And if you look at sub 1, the intent for purposes of implementing the plan is not there. I see my time is up.
One other question.
Justice Prosser.
What is your position? What would be your position if the town had imposed a temporary stay or moratorium on a couple of sections within the town?
If the basis for the locality of the prohibition, first of all, let me say I would object to it if it was phrased in the way it is, because as Justice Rogensack articulated, it not only just prohibits land division, it prohibits the acceptance and review. And that's directly contrary to the statute. But let's assume that it didn't do that, and it only prohibited land division in a couple sections. What I would want to know is what sections and why. Are these sections of the town where there is an air quality issue or a sunlight issue, or there's density issues in a 2-3-4 block area where they've got to work out how to deal with those things? We would not object if that were the ordinance. This ordinance clearly goes much further in prohibiting acceptance and review as well as townwide.
But my problem as an old legislator is that I don't think that I would want to second guess the legislative judgment on that.
You mean the town's legislative judgment?
Yeah.
And I think your point is well taken. You asked the question of opposing counsel earlier, and that is, you know, what are the bases underlying the ordinance? And they can certainly articulate bases, whether they're true, whether the veracity of those bases is accurate or not, we're never going to know. It's going to be difficult to challenge. But in your hypothetical, one could more easily challenge it because one could look to the areas and say, okay, we've got a building here and we don't want another building next to it because we've got some big sunlight issues, for example. So one could test it when one would be looking at that sort of ordinance and when it would be more defined and discreet, I guess is the best way I can answer that. Thank you very much.
Ms. Lubinsky, any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Lubinsky and Mr. Nording, for our arguments today involving smart growth as well as 245 and 66 and 62 chapters. That closes now after hearing you our arguments on 06AP 2761, Wisconsin Realtors Association versus Town of West Point. We are now adjourned for our November hearings, and the court will meet at 3:15 in closed conference. I should tell you. Justice Siegler's chair is empty because she will not participate.